Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And we have something of a tradition here at Stuff to Blow Your Mind. Every summer, generally in the early goings of summer, we devote an episode to just sharing some of our personal reading recommendations for you, the Stuff to Blow Your Mind listener.
That's right, because summer breeze makes you feel fine, blowing through the jasmine of your mind. Yeah. You want a book to accompany that jasmine of your mind, and we've got a bunch of recommendations here.
That's right. We have, as always, we try and get a collection, a little fiction, a little nonfiction, because, you know, we don't just throw a whole bunch of scientific books at you, and we're probably not going to hit you over the head with anything too stuffy. But likewise, we know that our readers have diverse tastes, and we want to present you with some fictional selections as well.
All right, so I'm going to launch in here, because I feel like this is probably the best, beachiest read if you are going to the beach and you do kind of want to put your brain on hold for a second, but you're really interested in knowing how some people's brains work when it comes to their art. And I'm talking about this book called Daily Rituals, How Artists Work. And it covers everybody from like Gustave Flaubert, Toni Morrison, Haruki Murakami, Igor Stravinsky. I mean, it's got a bunch of selections here that details the sort of habits that these people are made up of and how they create their art. And I find it fascinating because you may have some favorite authors in here or favorite artists or even favorite scientists, and you will find out how they started the day and, more importantly, how they obsessed. Because I feel like this is such a great little way to eavesdrop on people and find out how they do the thing that they do.
Yeah, and this, I was glancing through this earlier, it's segmented, correct? Like you can sort of skip through and you can see an individual's name and hone in on that section, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes, and it's done in little chunks. So again, it's something you can pick up and put down really easily. The writer is Mason Curry and he collected these. I believe he has a website in which he started to detail people's daily habits, luminaries mostly. I'll just read this one little bit. About Franz Kafka, says, frustrated with his living quarters and day job, wrote in a letter to Felice Bauer in 1912, quote, time is short. My strength is limited. The office is a horror. The apartment is noisy. And if a pleasant, straightforward life is not possible, then one must try to wriggle through by subtle maneuvers. So you get insight into their psyche as well as what their daily rituals are.
Yeah, and you can say, hey, his life was chaotic and he got some stuff done and made a name for himself. Maybe I can do that too.
There's even this great bit about Patricia Highsmith, who is, she wrote, I believe, The Talented Mr. Ripley, about how she had this intense connection with animals, particularly snails, and how she smuggled these snails into other countries by attaching them to, like, I think, under her breast.
Oh.
It's good stuff.
Oh, wow. So there's another, you know, she attached snails to her breast and she got stuff done. Maybe I can do that as well. Improve my
That's the answer, folks.
Improve my workflow. All right. Well, the first book I'm going to bring up is one you may have heard me talk about a little bit before, and that is Dark Banquet, Blood and the Curious Lives of Blood-Feeding Creatures by Bill Shute. And he has a website devoted to this book, which is darkbanquet.com. So this is a wonderful text, very accessible. This is not a stuffy science text. This is a fun science text. The book deals primarily with vampire bats, but it also discusses a variety of other natural world blood drinkers. And it goes into the surprisingly interconnected worlds of natural world sanguivores and the mythic world of humanoid vampires. He gets into vampire hysteria and this interesting reality where you had the idea of the vampire in the West before we'd actually discovered vampire bats. I'm going to read just a quick little section from this book. Clearly, though, once word of the existence of real vampire bats began to circulate, a new supernatural emphasis on these mysterious and as yet unidentified creatures began to take shape. Bats living in Europe, where blood-feeding species had never existed, were gradually implicated as being vampires. Hysteria and storytelling outpaced reason and science, though to be frank, science has done a lousy job of getting its vampire bat story straight. So there's just a taste from the book. Like I say, very accessible, fun, and when I ran across it, it really blew my mind because I was just doing a quick science Monster of the Week post on the blog series where I was just kind of thinking, well, how would a human vampire have evolved? The answer or some suggestion of how this would work would best be found in the evolution of the vampire bat. And when I was looking for a good source on that, I ran across his text. And we ended up discussing this in an episode on vampire bats for Stuff to Blow Your Mind. Go back and listen to that. But essentially, you just get into this crazy idea, I mean, this crazy world where you're imagining the evolution of this creature. How does it end up in this scenario where it takes on blood as its eventual primary mode of feeding itself, its primary food?
Right, because as we've discussed before, this is not an easy living.
No.
You know?
It's not like they found the get-rich-quick scheme in the Hunger Game that is evolution. No, they ended up making a name for themselves on a really poor source of sustenance.
Yeah, and I think it underscores this whole idea of this heartbreaking idea when you talk about predation and you talk about being one of the animals in those circles. Because, again, we're pretty lucky to have gotten out of this, right, that no longer do we have predators going after us. But this heartbreaking idea where you have to, you know, constantly go after something, tear it apart, take its energy for your own day after day, particularly with these vampire bats, right? You have night after night, you must seek this blood for sustenance. And to me, that underscores the whole predation thing in the first place.
Yeah, we're all kind of vampires in a sense. Yeah,
I know. I'm a vegetarian, so
you're still a vampire. You're plant vampire.
Plant vampire. Yeah. Fine.
And they're sun vampires. So and dirt vampires.
Good point. Good point. The next selection here is a fiction work of fiction. It is called "The Girl with All the Gifts" by M.R. Carey, and I guess you would put this in the sci-fi realm. I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want any plot spoilers here, but it is just, it's grabbed me by the cojones, the invisible cojones that I have. And I'm just going to read this little selection here. It says, every morning, Melanie waits in her cell to be collected for class. When they come for her, Sergeant keeps his gun pointing at her while two of his people strap her into the wheelchair. She thinks they don't like her. She jokes that she won't bite, but they don't laugh. I mean, that's the beginning of it. I'm reading that because I want you guys to understand that this honestly is something that has completely arrested my attention here. I know that I'm not through it all the way yet, but it's excellent so far. Joss Whedon has said the story of Melanie and the people around her is so thoroughly crafted, so heartfelt, remorseless, and painfully human that it takes the potentially tired trope of the zombie apocalypse and makes it as fresh as it is terrifying. The story spirals towards a conclusion so surprising, so warm, and yet so chilling that it takes a moment to realize it's been earned since the first page and even before. It left me sighing with envious joy, like I'd been simultaneously offered flowers and beaten at chess a jewel. So, just to give you guys an idea of what it's about and the sort of accolades it's getting.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds fascinating, and I can't help but wonder, like, did the author take this on as a challenge to say, I'm going to write a zombie apocalypse novel, even though that idea, or everyone with any rational thought is going to say, don't write a zombie book. Whatever you do, don't write a zombie apocalypse book. But then she's done it, and she's made it work, and done it in a new and exciting way.
Yeah, it was making me think about Richard Matheson's I Am Legend, mm-hmm. in the same way that the internal state of this person is being plumbed, mm-hmm. to the deepest depths, that it's that you kind of forget that there's this other horrific story that it's wrapped up in. Does that make sense?
So yeah.
In I Am Legend, this man is so isolated, and there's such existential terror.
Yeah.
At having to board yourself up every night to keep, you know, the boogeyman away, that you forget that this is essentially a vampire story.
Yeah.
And in the same way, you know, the girl with all the gifts is making you forget that this is a zombie story.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, my next reading recommendation is another book that we've mentioned on the podcast, particularly in our Fraggle Rock Troglofauna episode. And this is The Wider Worlds of Jim Henson, Essays on His Work and Legacy Beyond The Muppet Show and Sesame Street. This was edited by Jennifer C. Garland and Anissa M. Graham. You can find this in, I think it's cheapest as a Kindle book, but you can order a physical copy as well. And I'm not going to read an excerpt, but I just want to roll through the titles of some of the collected essays by various authors just to give you a taste about how deeply these authors dive into the world of Henson, which, you know, ultimately is a very thought-out world. I mean, Henson wasn't just, spitfiring some ideas and saying, let's make something about some Muppets living in a cave. No, that was a very nuanced idea. They were setting out to achieve certain things and relate certain messages to a young audience.
Yeah, I mean, psychological and talking about the biodiversity is really interesting.
Yeah, so you have four different essays on Fraggle Rock, including No Sex, Please, We're Fraggles, which gets into gender in Fraggle Rock. The wonderful Ecology of Fraggle Rock by Justin Verfel that we referenced. You see either various essays in here about The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, including interpreting the various species in The Dark Crystal and Fraggle Rock, including What Was Sundered and Undone Shall Be Whole, Union, Nature, and Agra in The Dark Crystal. There are some essays about the Storyteller series, which I adore as well. Everyone's Storyteller, The Shifting Roles of Storytellers and Audiences in the Jim Henson Hour. There's some stuff on Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, of course. And then there's a couple here on Farscape as well, including Exploring the Alien Other of Farscape, Human Puppet Costume Cosmetics. So if you are a Henson fan, if you are a Labyrinth fan, Dark Crystal fan, Fraggle fan, etc., this is a book you really should check out, because all the authors take a deep, loving dive into these creations.
All right, and speaking of representations of animals, my next pick is a nonfiction pick. It's called Wild Ones, a sometimes dismaying, weirdly reassuring story about looking at people, looking at animals in America. And it's by John Mualim, who's also the author of the 2010 New York Times piece, Can Animals Be Gay?, which we did an episode on based on his writing and research. So I was really excited when this book came out, because I think that he has a very interesting perspective and his stuff is really well researched. I was also very interested in his perspective on the relationship between animals and humans, because he comes at it from the angle of, in 2010, he became a father. He became a new parent. And all of a sudden, he was aware of this deluge of animal-themed things coming into his life via his child. So you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. They love the animals.
Yeah. You all of a sudden have 500 books about animals. You have pajamas with animals on them. You have, you know, songs about animals. And he began to think about this in very serious terms. Like, what does this mean? This is a very illusory, fictional world that we're creating for these children. This is a fairy tale about animals. When in fact, the actual state of animals and the animal kingdom on Earth now is going to be vastly different when, you know, my daughter reaches the age of 30. Polar bears may not exist. So he started to take this on, this idea of conservation and extinction, and he looks at, I believe it's butterflies, polar bears, and the whooping crane, and follows their specific trajectories through conservation, through looming extinction, and how humans are actually trying to affect change. And it does get depressing at times because I don't want to ruin it for people, but the way in which we're going about this, he may argue, is that we may be creating a world that cannot sustain an animal kingdom in earnest as it has in the past. So even trying to conserve animals may be sort of a zero-sum game because we have so altered the landscape and we are squarely in the Anthropocene era, in which is the man-made era, and we are manipulating everything around us.
So it's a good one to read at the barbecue this summer, is what you're saying.
It is something that you should corner one of your family members about at the barbecue and just depress the hell out of them.
Sounds good. I mean, if you're like me, I mean, I like a good sobering read, you know? I mean, we're not talking about escapist books here. We're talking about books that make you think, make you reevaluate humanity's trajectory, your own personal trajectory.
Well, yeah, and he's also digging deeper into you know, the subconscious here too. He's saying, like, why aren't those polar bears effective anymore? Have their cuteness actually usurped their message, or the message that conservationists are trying to put out there about habitat loss and extinction? And so it's very interesting. It sort of talks about how psychologically we are taking all this information in, how it's essentially becoming ineffective. And why that is. Anyway, yes, it's a good read.
Now, Julie, I understand that you are about maybe halfway through watching True Detective, the HBO series, right now, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and you're enjoying it?
Yes. Can you see the spirals in my eyes? I cannot think of better writing, better storytelling, and also stories that hit on a lot of the themes that we talk about.
Yeah, I was, when I first started watching it, which was, I guess it was like 3 or 4 episodes into the run, and I started hearing all the buzz and people were cornering me. Noel, here in the recording studio, was cornering me and,
our producer,
and asking me if I was watching it yet and why I had not watched it yet. It was hitting all these various themes that we've covered before. It was lining up with some of my own personal interests. So, I love the show. And afterwards, I was really interested in the show's creator and writer, Nick Pizzolatto. Because clearly this is a guy whose brain is lining up with my own in some respects and has created some art that I'm really into. So I discovered his book, Galveston, a novel. And I very strongly recommend it, particularly if you were a fan of True Detective and you want a little more of that kind of flavoring in anticipation of a second season eventually coming out. Now, I want to preface and say this is not a book that is rife with a bunch of super mysterious intrigue. There's no mention of yellow kings. There's no Lovecraftian sort of elements in the works. But it does have a lot of the feel that you would find in some of the characters in True Detective. Now, this novel deals with a character by the name of Roy Caddy, who's a criminal, career criminal, living in New Orleans, and he finds out that he has a terminal illness right about the time that he finds out that his boss, who's a dangerous loan sharking bar owner, wants him dead. So there's this brutal sequence where he's double-crossed, barely makes it out of town with his life, and he ends up on the run into coastal Texas with a prostitute and a young girl. And from there, it just goes into some very interesting places. I don't want to give anything away, but you do have a character who's really coming to terms with what's important in life. What's he going to do with the rest of the life that he has here? How does that square with what he's made of his life so far? And it's just beautifully written. I was really impressed with Pizzolatto's use of language in this novel. The character at times feels like he is kind of cut from the same cloth as the Rust Cole character. They're maybe sort of cosmic twins in some way. But yeah, beautiful read. And at the end, I actually ended up tearing up a bit. So I'm not going to, I do have one little section I'm going to read for you. I'd really want to read you the last couple of paragraphs, but that would be spoiling things. We were silent for a long stretch. Then, with the wind shushing outside and the rhythm of a skier, a cloud-riddled heaven sealed the horizon, and I felt like we were bugs crawling along the edge of the world, which we were in a way. I kept us westward, the sun at our backs, the girls' faces turning sleepy. That old rule came back. You do your own time, not someone else's. But what about after your own time is done, I wondered. I looked down at the little girl sleeping, one fist curled under her chin. Why'd you take the silencer off, I asked. Rocky shrugged and followed something out the window. I thought it looked meaner without it. I said, have you ever been to Galveston? She shook her head. So there's just a taste. Again.
Yeah, already. Whew. There in that scene.
So yeah, don't go into it expecting another slice of True Detective. But if you appreciated the writing, you appreciated some of the feel of that show, then you really can't go wrong with that book. And last I checked, the Kindle version is available for like $2.99. So you're basically losing money if you don't buy it.
There you go.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so in the realm of fiction, Joyce Carol Oates, the pick that I have here is Blonde. I believe this came out maybe in 2000. It's an older book, but I wanted to go back to it because I think we were talking about Marilyn Monroe and her breathiness.
Yes.
And that got me to thinking, like, I really would like to know more about Marilyn Monroe. And Joyce Carol Oates is one of my favorite writers. The first time I was sort of indoctrinated with her writing was in the short story, Where Are You Going? Where Have You Been?
Mm-hmm.
And that's about a teenager named Connie, and she's got a really bad case of teenager ennui. At the same time, she's got this burgeoning sexuality that she's trying to deal with. And what I love about this story is that it's a kind of coming age story that everybody knows about, but they never discuss. And what I'm talking about here is like the burden of sexuality as a woman. And essentially what that sometimes boils down to is predator and prey. And in that short story, this guy, Arnold Friend, shows up as the predator in this gold convertible. And this gold convertible becomes this kind of like death chariot for Connie. So the reason I bring this short story up is because Blonde is about Marilyn Monroe, obviously, but more about that burden of sexuality. And it is just a phenomenal take on this historic, iconic person who is in many ways unknowable. And yet somehow Oates has gotten into her internal life, into her thoughts, what I think might be her thoughts, right? And has written this narrative that is so compelling that you think that you are reading Marilyn Monroe's diary. And it starts out with Marilyn Monroe's child and follows her through her suicide. And it is so gripping. I can't even tell you, like, it's probably one of the most haunting texts that I've ever read. And I don't know how she did it. I really feel like that's one of those moments where she was struck by the muse.
Yeah.
And how she inhabited this person who is very much sort of a flat character for us, right? It's this this woman who is innocent, and yet she's the sex kitten. And you see through this lens of her life, this other side to her, maybe how she became Marilyn Monroe. And Marilyn Monroe, by the way, in real life was freighted with all sorts of problems, as we know. And her mother had some very bad mental problems that obviously showed up in Marilyn Monroe's life. Anyway, let me just read this New York Times review real quick because I think it is pithy, and I will go on and on if I don't stop myself by reading this. So it says, Blonde, although sometimes sloppy and sentimental, it is perhaps the most ferocious fictional treatise ever written on the uninhabitable grotesqueness of femininity. No one embodied femininity better than Marilyn Monroe, who concocted a persona who seemed to exist only for sex and at the same time to be oblivious of it, who possessed an eroticism that was all responsiveness and no desire. How else to cater to a masculine sexuality that hates itself and demands that females receive and bear away that hatred, like dutiful wives cleaning up after a husband's violent binge? And I thought that was great. That really takes the spirit of this book and the spirit of those times in which Marilyn Monroe came to inhabit all of these anxieties about sexuality.
Excellent. Well, I have to admit that when I first heard about that book, mm-hmm. it was hard for me to get excited about it because I love Joyce Carol Oates. Mm-hmm. I most of what I've read of hers is strange fiction stories that she's written, and I believe I've read a longer work or two sort of dealing with twisted, flawed individuals, grotesque individuals, mm-hmm. even. And so the cell, oh, she wrote a book about Marilyn Monroe. Just on the surface, it doesn't seem to match up, you know, because I'm thinking Joyce Carol Oates is on one end of the spectrum, Marilyn Monroe is on the other, and never the two should meet. But yeah. Now that you've explained it, I mean, it makes perfect sense. You mentioned the grotesqueness of femininity. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that bridges the gap right there. So I'm actually more interested in checking the book out myself now.
Yeah, and her narrative techniques are fascinating, and she uses smell a lot. And you wouldn't think that, like, oh, I'm going to read this book about Marilyn Monroe, and there's one of the tropes is going to be smell.
Huh.
And it comes to symbolize, and really, it even comes to sort of symbolize Marilyn Monroe's attempt to try to escape her more working class grassroots, you know, and then ascent to stardom through the sense of smell. It's fascinating. But yeah, I mean, this is the person, Joyce Carol Oates, who wrote the book Zombie about Dahmer.
Yeah, great book.
You've read that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, so you wouldn't think Dahmer, Marilyn Monroe. But again, it sounds like it works.
In her capable hands, sure.
Yeah. My next selection is another one that I would definitely put in this category of the cell maybe not sounding all that great on the surface of things. And the book is 11/22/63 by Stephen King. Now, I'm a longtime King fan, so I don't have to get over a Stephen King hurdle. I think some people have that in their mind. Like, here's a very popular author.
Mm-hmm.
He's been churning out books like crazy for years. Is he deserving of my attention? I would argue yes. I think Stephen King has earned his place, and has certainly earned his literary reputation on top of his commercial reputation. But even for me, this was a hard sell because the idea on the book here is, hey, what if you traveled back in time to stop the Kennedy assassination? Which of course occurred on 11/22/63.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an interesting thought experiment. You know, you get into what would happen if you could travel back in time? What would happen if you changed things? The butterfly effect of changing something in history. And that's fascinating, but it doesn't necessarily connect with me beyond that. So when the book came out, I just kind of noticed that it existed and moved on. And then just in the last fall, I was in the situation where, of course, I had a new child in the house. I seemed like I was spending a lot of time laying on the floor of his bedroom waiting for him to go to sleep so I could sneak out. And a friend sent me a Kindle copy of this book. And I started reading it and just could not put it down.
Mm-hmm.
It was just it's just highly addictive right from the beginning. There's no hurdle to overcome in reading 11/22/63, because one of the really fascinating things here is, first of all, there's no worrying about time travel science, how you do it. Basically, a magic portal opens up. How does it work? Who knows? Maybe it's a wormhole. Maybe it's magic. Don't concern yourself with that, because the story is ultimately about more than that. The idea is that this portal only opens up to a period in the past prior to 11/22/63. And so in order to go back in time and change the past, you would have to go back, you'd have to live in the past. You'd have to go back into the past and live for a year or two to reach the point where you could change history.
Hmm.
And there are these added complications in that you get into the idea that the time stream is like a river. And to try and divert a river, there's resistance. So our character, as he goes back in time and ultimately sets out on this quest to change history, he begins to encounter resistance to the change.
So he's trying to be injected out of that time stream.
To a sense. Or it's sort of like there's so much riding on the way things work,
mm-hmm.
that there's a resistance to making small changes in the time stream.
Huh.
But he's trying to make a large one. And in doing so, the forces against him are almost immeasurable. So it's a fascinating read. It's really one of the best King books I've read in quite some time. So I highly recommend it.
Well, yeah. And I think that, again, he is someone who is also just a master at his craft. And
oh, yes.
So I can't imagine a bad turn at a character.
Yeah.
Or even just a plot line with him.
And you also learn way more about the Kennedy assassination than you ever thought you wanted to know.
Oh, good. That means that you can drop in on those conspiracy theory chat rooms, right?
Yeah, and then you know what they're talking about. You know who some of these figures are, because they show up as figures in this book. Because part of it, too, is the character goes back in time and he's not certain. There's no one, like, they think there's like a 90-something percent chance that it is just the lone gunman theory. But what if? You don't want to go back and kill Lee Harvey Oswald if there's even like a 2%, 5% chance even that he's not the guy. And then ultimately you wouldn't be able to change history anyway.
Yeah. And by the way, Marilyn Monroe is wrapped up into
exactly.
this as well.
So there you go. Fitting pair of books there for the summer.
Indeed. All right. My last pick here is Cabinet of Curiosities, My Notebooks, Collections, and Other Obsessions by Guillermo del Toro and Mark Scott Zikri. And this was actually a book that I got for my husband because he likes Del Toro, and he really likes a lot of this, I don't know if you would call it this, like, monster aesthetic in art, the grotesquery, I don't know. But I've been poring through it. It is kind of a much bigger deep than that Daily Rituals book I was talking about, where you get to peer into artists' lives. Here is this really like lens into Del Toro's life. You get to see his collections, just stuff that he collects. In fact, I'm looking at this picture right now of a life-size sculpture of H.P. Lovecraft by Thomas Kubler, which is watching over the horror library at the Bleak House. I mean, he has a life-size sculpture of H.P. Lovecraft.
He's kind of leering at you as you walk around the house.
A very odd look on H.P. Lovecraft's face. And so you also have some of his influences. So Mary Shelley and Lovecraft, of course, and Arthur Machen, Edgar Allan Poe. Is it Machen or Machen?
I'm not sure. But yeah, author of the Great God Pan, which is an extremely creepy short story.
Yeah, so in this sense, I think you get a lot more than you would bargain for from someone who is a director, right? You would normally think, oh, maybe I'll get a little bit of access to how he works. But no, you get everything, it looks like here, short of a personal tour of his own home. So I just thought it was great for anybody who is interested in some of the monster science that you have been covering, and anybody who is interested in his films, because he's got thoughts for new films kind of scribbled in there, bits of dialogue. He's got other bits of dialogue from plays and from stories that have colored his perception. And then, of course, just his sketches are fascinating.
Yeah, his sketches are amazing. And apparently when he pitches projects, like the sketches are very much a part of it. And the sketches are part of his writing process and a part of his way of bringing his own ideas together and then ultimately presenting them to studios.
Yeah, so it is really kind of like cracking open his brain. You're able to see all his obsessions, his influences, and then how he thinks and his representation of that in sketches. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know if beautiful, but horrifically beautiful.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. He gets horrifically beautiful better than just about anybody. I mean, certainly you see in his work, there's so much monstrosity. He genuinely loves monsters and understands what monsters are. You see a great deal of Catholic imagery. Like I especially with Blade 2, I love that he created a vampire that could only be killed by staking it through the side of the rib cage. As in the same way that Christ dies on the cross when the spear enters the rib cage and pierces the heart, and he has this whole design in place where the bone is too solid over the heart, so you can only go in through the side. I mean, it's just I love the man's aesthetic; it's wonderful.
Which is makes it that much more exciting to know that he's working on H.P. Lovecraft's At the Mountains of Madness.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a couple of pages dedicated to that as well. So that level of detail, seeing that come across in a film, would be amazing.
Yeah, I really hope that project comes together. It sounds wonderful.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, I have one more reading suggestion, and this one has to do with monsters, and it's for young readers. So this one is certainly worth picking up. It's called Monsters and Water Beast, Creatures of Fact or Fiction by Karen Miller, with illustrations by Sergio Ruzier. And this is this looks at a number of different monsters, including Bigfoot, the Big Bird of Texas, Hoop Snakes, Mothman, the Jersey Devil, and then the Water Beast, Sea Maiden of Biloxi, Champ, the Sea Serpent of Gloucester, and the Cadborosaurus. This is ultimately a skeptic's book on monsters for young readers. I mean, I enjoy it, so you don't have to be too young to get into it. But it's wonderfully illustrated. It's looking at these creatures from a skeptical point of view, but a fun point of view. It's not full of negativity. It doesn't say don't love your monsters, because clearly this is a book that loves the monsters.
Yeah.
While also saying, hey, I can love this and also apply a skeptic mind to it. So if you have a young reader, or not so young reader, in your household, that is interested in monsters and has that kind of skeptical mindset, then I highly recommend it.
Indeed. Which is actually a good reminder about your monster series, called Monster Science. You should check that out on our Mind Stuff YouTube channel.
Yes. We have 6 episodes of it, and we're plotting 6 more. I'll let you know, when those come to fruition. All right, well, what about you, Julie? Do you have anything you were planning to read later this summer or later this year? Well, what's on the future? What's on the to-read shelf?
The Martian by Andy Weir and The Leftovers by Tom Proda, which Noel, our producer, told me is actually being made into a series, I believe.
Oh, I've seen the ads for it on HBO, and I can't tell what it's about except screaming and pain and
I think it's people
time.
Who suddenly disappear.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have picked it up in my hands a couple times and looked at it, and I have not bought it yet, but it's on my list.
Huh. Very, very good. 2 things I'm looking forward to reading. 1, I don't know when this is coming out. Hopefully sometime. It's supposedly coming out this year. The sooner the better for my taste. And that is The Unholy Consult by R. Scott Baker. I've mentioned Baker before on the podcast, probably way too many times, actually. He wrote Disciple of the Dog, he wrote Neuropath, and he also wrote the trilogy, the Prince of Nothing trilogy, followed by the trilogy, The Aspect Emperor. This is the 3rd book in the Aspect Emperor trilogy. Both these trilogies take place in this dark fantasy world that it's created. You can think Game of Thrones, but with more sort of dark, Lovecraftian, Clark Ashton Smithy sort of magic going on.
Okay.
But also, Baker is deeply immersed in philosophy and neuroscience. So all of everything he's creating, it's not pure escapism, because even though you're reading about, say, a barbarian on the plains of some dark fantasy epic world, that character is struggling with his own self in a way that really forces you to reconsider your own predicament. It's tremendous stuff. I highly recommend it, and I'm really looking forward to reading The Unholy Consult when it comes out. A bit of nonfiction that I'm looking forward to reading as of this morning is The Body in Pain, The Making and Unmaking of the World by Elaine Scarry. I heard about this one listening to the episode Unspeakable Acts on the CBC radio program Ideas with Paul Kennedy, which for my money is just about the best podcast or radio show out there. Ideas, CBC, Paul Kennedy. Check it out if you haven't. But this book by Scarry apparently, you know, gets into this idea of pain and torture in a really deep manner. Looking at pain is frame breaking, context breaking, our difficulty to understand the pain of others, the terrible power of torture to destroy language. There's a quote just from the intro of the book where she says, "This book is about the way other persons become visible to us or cease to be visible to us. It's about the way we make ourselves available to one another."
Hmm.
So I'm as someone who has of late been interested in elements of torture and pain, this seems like a must-read book for me.
Yeah, it sounds like she'll be covering the territory of objectifying someone and creating that space.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, it's a very interesting realm to explore.
Yeah, she speaks in this ideas episode I mentioned, Unspeakable Acts, and it's mm-hmm. really interesting to hear her talk about pain in these in these terms that I hadn't even thought about yet. So check out the Ideas podcast radio show and check out The Body in Pain if this is a topic that interests you as well.
What is the author's name again?
Elaine Scarry, Scarry.
Okay, so. Yes. Nominative determinism at work again.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Part philosophical meditation, part cultural critique.
All right. I bet you guys have some books that you would like to recommend. But please let us know, like, what is the number one thing on your list to read or that you would recommend? Either way, we would love to know. You can find us, of course, at StuffToBlowYourMind.com.
Yeah, and that's where you'll find all our blog post episodes, our podcasts, our videos, as well as links out to our social media accounts such as Tumblr, Twitter, and Facebook. And there is still an old-fashioned way to get in touch with us as well.
That's right. You can send an old creaky email to us at BlowTheMind@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.